हाँ ना,
good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Please join me in saying the Anabakoa.
Continue.
Kabel Ushmatsia Katenu Yo Dea Salmos Shinkufav Sadiyutta. And the eighth verse of the Anabakoach we say in a whisper. Our class today is continuing to study the Sefer Joshua, the book of Joshua. You'll find the handout on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix. In row 6, the third column from the left, that's a landing page of the essences of the parashiot. When the landing page opens up, scroll down to the book of Joshua. And today we are studying chapter 9. When the link opens up, the first thing that's available is a link to the book of Joshua for chapter 9. And that's the Mechon Mamre website. So open up that link and then scroll down to chapter 9. And then return to the book of Joshua commentary, because we will be starting there. And we will start with the L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud, Kudsha Barichu, Ishkinte, Bidhilu, Urchimu, Udhilu, Udhilu, Urchimu, Le'akta, L'shem, Yudhe, Bavate, Le'yichuda, Shulim, B'shem, Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, La'sok Torah Mitzvah, Vahino Amadunaya Lohendo Alena Maseya Deno Panane Alena Maseya Deno Pananehu. We are beginning with the book of Joshua commentary, and we're beginning with my edition. There are 27 verses in chapter 9. The number 27 connects to the 27 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. Those are the 22 basic letters plus the 5 final letters. Together, the 27 letters of the Hebrew alphabet represent all of the metaphysical energy of the total of all the complete creation from beginning to end. Beginning the reading of the commentary. All the Canaanite kings throughout the land gathered together to fight with Yehoshua and with Israel with one mouth. This is verse 2 in chapter 9. And the phrase one mouth does not make sense. Doesn't make sense in either Hebrew or English. What is the meaning that they gathered together? Were they unified? Is that what one mouth means? We don't really know. So let us continue with the commentary. This was all out war, not only against Israel, but against the one God who had promised them the land. In three places, we find the people of the world rebelling against the Holy One, blessed be He. At the Tower of Babel, in the war of Gog and Magog, and in the days of Joshua. Why does it say with one mouth? Because they went against God, of whom it is said, "Hear Israel, Hashem is one." Since many today are convinced that the world is in the throes of the war of Gog and Magog, this midrash underlines the connection between many aspects of our present text about the war in the days of Joshua and the time we are living in now. For Israel in the time of Joshua, the war for the conquest of the land was a holy war. How would you define a holy war? It's an unwritten commentary. Let's continue. The decadent Canaanite star worshippers, suddenly threatened with being driven out of their lovely homeland, doubtless saw the Israelites as a new breed of religious fanatics, waging a dangerous jihad that had to be thwarted at all costs. Yet after witnessing God's miracles on behalf of the Israelites, many of the Canaanites were already demoralized and fearful, and felt that if you can't beat them, join them. However, in the Torah, God had strictly forbidden that the Israelites to make any covenant with the Canaanites and their gods, or permit them to dwell in their land, lest they make you sin against me when you serve their gods, for they will be a snare for you. This is an unwritten commentary, but what Rabbi Abraham is saying, what we all know, the people around you influence you. And when it comes to things like idol worship, the people around you having ideas, those ideas are going to penetrate into your values. Sometimes it takes many generations for that to happen, but it will happen. Continuing to read. The classical biblical commentator, Radak, Rabbi David Kimchi, in a lengthy comment on our text in verse 7, explains exactly what the Israelite warriors were demanding of the Canaanites. They were not intending to kill them, no matter what. The commandment to destroy the Canaanites applied only if they make you sin. However, if they would agree to uproot idolatry from among themselves and accept the seven universal mitzvot of the children of Noah, they would be allowed to remain in the land on a condition that they agreed to serve and pay taxes to the Israelites, in essence, to subordinate themselves to the Israelite national agenda of building God's temple and spreading his light to the nations. Only if they refuse these conditions and refuse to evacuate would they be killed. The one difference between the Canaanites and any other nations against whom Israel made war was that if other nations refused to make peace and insisted on waging war, the Israelites would, on defeating them, kill only their males, but keep their wives and children as slaves. However, if the Canaanites made war, the Israelites were commanded by God to kill them, all the men, all the women, and all the children. For some, this may raise agonizing ethical issues, which I cannot address except by saying that the biblical mitzvot to exterminate these nations is evidently founded on the premise that they were a thoroughly evil influence that had to be nullified completely for the sake of God's plan to reveal himself to the entire world by replacing ancient idolatry with faith in the one God. It must be emphasized that nowhere in Judaism is there any justification whatever for the wholesale extermination of any nation, excepting the Amalekites and the Canaanites, both of whom have now completely disappeared. If today some evil criminals and terrorists behave like Canaanites and Amalekites, then the individuals or the gangs exhibiting these tendencies. Or exhibiting these such behavior should be brought to justice by the legitimate forces of law and order in order to neutralize their destructive influence. The Talmud Yerushalmi in the section of Shavuot states that on entry to the land, Joshua sent three written proclamations to the Canaanites. Whoever wants to make peace can make peace. Whoever wants to make war may make war. And whoever wants to evacuate may leave. Some of the Canaanites departed voluntarily and went to North Africa, which essentially became Carthage, where they received a land as prosperous as the one they left. Some sources state that some of the Canaanites went to Europe, and the implication is to Germany. Since the Gibeonites knew that they could save themselves without leaving it if they agreed to the Israelite conditions, Radak asks why they resorted to the ruse described in our chapter, and answers that having seen how the Israelites had destroyed Jericho and Ai, they were afraid that the Israelites might not adhere to their conditions. The bite of the serpent. The Gibeonites were actually Hivites. Their deception of Joshua and the children of Israel was a deep historical irony, as the Hivites had tried to convert and intermarry with Israel in the time of Jacob. When Shem, son of Hamor, the Hivite, raped Dinah, Jacob's sons tricked the men of Shem into circumcising, but on the third day, when they were in great pain, Shimon and Levi entered the town and killed them all for having failed to protest the rape of Dinah, which flouted the Noahide law. Thus, in our chapter, we read that they also acted with cunning. This was the cunning of the serpents. In Aramaic, a serpent is Hivya, from the same root as the nation of the Hivites. Students of the Kabbalah will note that the fake old provisions, clothes, and shoes the Gibeonites used included crumbs or nikudim, sparks, dots, alluding to the Kabbalistic world of chaos, nikudim, the root of evil. The Sefer 138 opening says, revealed by Rabbi Chaim Luzzatto, famous for his book, The Path of the Just, explains that as well, a little more clearly. Radak, noting that moldy bread is covered in red, green, and black spots, also relates nikudim, the dots, to Levan's spotted flock, likewise bound up with the mystery of the world of Nikudim. Midrash Tanhuma, a series of Midrashim, shows the parallel between how the serpent tricked Adam and Eve into sinning in the hope of killing Adam and marrying Eve, and how the Gibeonites tricked the Israelites into making a forbidden covenant with them. If they kill us, they will violate their oath, while if they keep us alive, they will violate God's mitzvot. Either way, they will be punished and will not inherit the land. The Gibeonites were not true converts, since they converted not because they wanted to serve the one God, but out of fear. It was at the end of 3 days that the Israelites found out that they had been deceived. This is the hark back to Shimon and Levi's deception of the men of Shechem on the third day. Despite the Gibeonites' deception, the Israelites, having publicly sworn to protect them, could not violate their oath, as this would have been a Chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name. Joshua therefore gave the Gibeonites the status of a caste of temple laborers who were not permitted to intermarry with Israelites. In this respect, they are similar to the Mamzer, a child born of an incestuous union. They appear on the stage of history again in the time of King Shaul and King David, and after the destruction of the first temple, they went into exile to Babylon with the tribe of Judah, returning to Israel with Ezra. The Gibeonites are unknown today. Let us go to the Machon Mamre website and begin our reading. Vayhi kishmoa kohamlachim asher be'ever ha'yarden bahar uvashpela ulechol hof hayam hagadol el mul halvanon hachiti v'ha'emori Haknaani, Haprizi, Ahivi. And it came to pass, when all the kings that were beyond the Jordan in the hill country, and in the lowland, and on all the shores of the great sea in front of Lebanon, the Hittite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite, heard thereof. There are six nations, with the seventh nation being discussed, the Gibeonites, who were part of the Hivites. Verse 2. Let me remind you, there are 10 nations in the land of Israel. Seven were defeated by the war of Joshua. The other three will be defeated as the war of Gog and Magog. Verse 2. Vayikabetsu yachdav lehilachem im Yehoshua ve'im Yisrael. That they gathered themselves together to fight with Joshua and with Israel with one accord. But it actually says with one mouth. But the translator is uncomfortable with the language of one mouth. Verse 3. Vayoshve Givon Shamu et Asher Asa Yehoshua Liricho Wilai. But when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done to Jericho and to Ai, verse 4. Vayasu Gam Chema Yarma Vayelku Vayitstayaru. Vayichu Shakin Balim Lahamorehem Veno dot yain balim bukaim sorarim. They also did work wily, and went and made as if they had been ambassadors, and took old sacks upon their asses, and wineskins worn and rent and patched up. Verse 5. Unalot balot tulaot uraglehem uslamot balot alehem. Bekolehem tzedam yaveshaya mikudim. And worn shoes and clouded upon their feet, and worn garments upon them. And all the bread of their provision was dry, and was become crumbs. Verse 6. Vayelku el Yehoshua el hamachane hagilgal vayomru elav ve'el ish Yisrael. Meretz Rechoka Banu Beata Kirtu Lanu Berit. And they went to Joshua to the camp of Gilgal and said to him and to the men of Israel, "We are come from a far country. Now therefore make ye a covenant with us." God had commanded the Israelites not to have anything to do with the Canaanites. The Gibeonites pretended to be not a Canaanite. They pretended to be from another nation further away. Verse 7. Vayomer Ish Yisrael El Hachivi Ulai Bekir Biata Yoshev Echrat Lecha Brit. And the men of Israel said unto the Hivites, "Peradventure ye dwell among us, and how shall we make a covenant with you?" Peradventure is a word that essentially they're saying it's coincidence. We don't know what to do with you. So how can we make a covenant with you? Of course, this does not make sense because the nation has the Urim Bituvim, and they could have asked what to do with these people. Verse 8. Vayomru el Yehoshua Avadecha Anachnu Vayomer Alehem Yehoshua. Miatem umeyin tavo. And they said unto Joshua, "We are thy servants." And Joshua said unto them, "Who are you? And from where do you come?" Verse 9. Vayomru elav me'eretz rechoka. Me'od ba'u avadecha l'shem Hashem Elohecha ki shamanu shamo et kol asher asa b'mitzrayim. And they said unto him, from a very far country that your servants are come, because of the name of the Lord thy God, for we have heard the fame of him and all that he did in Egypt. You think they're playing this game out? Verse 10. Ve'ed kol asher asa lishnei malkei ha'emori asher ve'ever ha'yardein l'sichon melech ha'keshbon u'log melech ha'bashan asher be'ashtarot. And all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites that were beyond the Jordan, and to Sihon the king of Heshbon, and to Og the king of Bashan, who was at Ashtaroth. They're relating the history that essentially took place 40 years earlier. Verse 11. Vayomru Elenu Zekenenu Wakal Yoshve Artsenu Lemor Kehu Veyerchem Yerchem Seda Laderech Uku Likratam Viamartem Alehem Avdehem anachnu v'atakir tu lanu berit. And our elders and all the inhabitants of our country spoke to us, saying, take provision in your hand for the journey, and go to meet them, and say unto them, we are your servants, and now make ye a covenant with us. Verse 12. Zelachmenu cham kitztayadu oto mibateinu v'yom seitenu lalechet alechem v'yata hinen yavesh. This is our bread we took hot for our provisions out of our houses on the day we came forth to go unto you. But now, behold, it is dry and it has become crumbs. Again, they're playing out the charade. Just making it look more real on a physical level. Verse 13. Ve'ele nodot ha'yayin asher mileinu kadashim v'hine itbaka'u ve'ele shalmoteinu unaleinu balu merov aderech meod. And these wineskins which we filled were new, and behold, they are rent. And these are garments, and our shoes are worn by reason of this very long journey. Verse 14. Vayichu ha'nashim mitzedam v'et piyashem lo sha'alu. And the men took of their provision and asked not counsel at the mouth of the Lord. The question is, why didn't they? They have this tool, but they don't use it. Is this a mistake by a new leader, Joshua, who's recently come into the leadership? Or is this part of the plan of creation that they won't ask? Or did they ask and there was no answer? Verse 15. Vayash lachem Yehoshua shalom vayikrot lachem berit lechayotam vayishavu lachem nesiei ha'eda. And Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live. And the princes of the congregation swore unto them. Verse 16.
Vayehi mikzeh shiloshet yamim acharei asher kartu lachem berit. Vayishmeu ki kirovim heim elav uvkirbo heim yoshvim.
And it came to pass at the end of 3 days, after they had made a covenant with them, that they heard that they were their neighbors, and that they dwelt among them. Verse 17.
Vayisu v'nei Yisrael vayavo el areihem vayom hashlishi v'areihem givon v'hakira uveirot.
And the children of Israel journeyed and came unto their cities on the third day. Now their cities were Gibeon and Chephirah and Beerot and Kiryat Jearim. Each of these names have significant meaning.
Verses 18. Velo hikum b'nei Yisrael inishbi'u lachem v'siyei ha'ida b'Hashem Elohei Yisrael v'ilonu ko ha'ida al hanshim.
And the children of Israel smote them not, because the princes of the congregation had sworn unto them by the Lord, the God of Israel. And all the congregation murmured against the princes. The people were upset. They spoke badly about the princes for making this decision without asking Hashem's permission and putting them in this situation, because they have an oath, people have an oath to the princes, the leaders of the tribe. It's a very confusing story, but it's also a very human story, because we do this today. We vote in a president. We vote in the governors, we vote in senators and representatives. We vote in all of these people, and then when they make decisions we don't like, we speak against them. Now, it's true, today we don't really have a technique to be able to know what is the right thing to do according to the Torah, because we have different opinions in almost every decision point. But still, this is what we have. These are the tools we've been given. These are the tools that we merit. Do we know more? Yes. Do we know more? The people who do know more don't have permission to to reveal it to us. Verse 19. Vayomru kol hamsin el kol haida anachnu nishbanu lachem Vashem Elohei Yisrael v'yata lo nukal lingoa lahem. But all the princes said unto all the congregation, we have sworn unto them by the Lord, the God of Israel. Now, therefore, we may not touch them. And the people followed along because the people had sworn fealty to the princes. And the princes were following their agreements. Sometimes you make a mistake and what you agree to. In modern days, many times people try and back out of those agreements. But here the Torah is teaching us we're not supposed to back out of an agreement, no matter what the consequences. Verse 20. Zot nase lahem v'hachaye otam v'lo yihye aleinu ketzef al hashvua asher nishbanu lahem. This we will do to them and let them live, lest wrath be upon us because of the oath which we swore unto them. Of course, we could ask the question, didn't they have the tool to change the oath? We've been taught through Kabbalah, through the Talmud, techniques for changing oaths, absolving ourselves of oaths. Why not do that? Verse 21. The answer to my question, why not do that, is because other nations would not know the thing about the absolving of the oath, and they would decide that the Jews were not to be trusted. The children of Israel don't make good agreements. They don't keep them. And that would be worse than whatever the Gibeonites could do. Verse 21. Vayomru alehem hansim yichyu ayihyu chotve etzim v'shoave mayim lekol haida ka'asher dibru lachem ansim. And the princes said concerning them, let them live. So they became hewers of wood and drawers of water for the whole of the congregation, as the princes had spoken concerning them. Verse 22. Vayikra lachem Yehoshua vaydaber aleihem leimor lama remitem otanu leimor rechokim anachnu michem meyod viatem v'kirbeinu Yisra ishvim. And Joshua called for them, and he spoke unto them, saying, why have ye beguiled us, saying, we are very far from you, when ye dwell among us? Joshua was asking for the reason why. Verse
We are tarurin atem, willo yikaret, mihem eved v'chot vei, eitzim v'so avei. Ma'im levet Elohei. Now therefore you are cursed, and there shall never fail to be of you bondsmen, both hewers of wood and drawers of water, for the house of my God. Verse 24. Vayanu et Yehoshua, vayomru ki huked lavadecha, et asher tziva Hashem Elohecha. Et Moshe avdo latet lachem et kol haaretz uchashmid et kol yoshvei haaretz mifnechem v'nirah meod l'nafshetenu mifnechem v'naaseh et hadavar hazeh. And they answered Joshua and said, because it was certainly told thy servants how that the Lord thy God commanded his servant Moses to give you all this land and to destroy all the inhabitants of the land from before you. Therefore we were very afraid for our lives because of you and have done this thing. Verse 25. V'yata hinenu v'yadecha k'atov v'kayashar v'enecha le'asot lanu aseh. And now behold, we are in thy hand, as it seems good and right unto thee to do with us. Do so. The Gibeonites were saying, we'd rather be servants and under your thumb than be dead. Verse 26. Vayas lachem kein vayetzel otam miyad b'nei Yisrael v'lo haragum. And so did he unto them, and delivered them out of the hand of the children of Israel, that they slew them not. Verse 27. Vayitnem Yehoshua vayom ha'u otveitim Ushave Mayim Le'eda Umizbah Hashem Ad Hayom Hazeh El Hamakom Asher Yifar. And Joshua made them that day hewers of wood and drawers of water for the congregation and for the altar of Hashem unto this day, in the place which he should choose. It's the end of the chapter, the end of the class. Are there any questions? While you're unmuting yourself to ask questions, hopefully, I'll remind you that there's two more classes today. One is a deep Zohar class at 4:30 West Coast time. And at 7 o'clock West Coast time is the class of the Tikkuni Zohar. Are there any questions?
I have a question. It's Hannah. I wonder if there's a link between this story and what is happening, and that story we read about the woman Timnah, that they wouldn't allow to convert. Seems like there's sort of a similarities to me between the two situations.
There may be. I have not read of one or made the connection intuitively, but there may be.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it's saying in both stories, the way you treat people has consequences. They treated Timnah inappropriately. She had a desire, and they did not have empathy for that desire. And so she rushed off and created chaos. The nation of Amalek came through her. That was a cause and effect. If you don't have empathy for the people, that's what's going to happen. And the same thing is true here. They were afraid. You're giving them these three choices, but they can't trust you because they don't know you well enough to trust you. There's no empathy there to understand their situation. So you make them slaves when all they were supposed to do is obey the seven laws of Noah and pay tithes and taxes to the upkeep of the temple. They didn't have to be slaves for the temple. So yes, there is a connection.
Okay, another thing. Back in the month of Shavuot, when our ladies met, we learned that the tribe of Asher learned to live with the Canaanites. They didn't try to, they didn't war against them when Deborah wanted them to, and all. And at that time, I think the next month, I just came across something that said that we knew of their sexual improprieties, but they also in business didn't have true weights. In other words, their dealings in business were not good.
In a concealed way.
And it happened.
It's later on in the, but that's all right. Continue. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of building up to what the main question is. And Tony made the comment that he had gone to Walmart and he had done the self-service checking out. And when he went to put his card in, $100 bill came out. And he immediately looked to the left to find one of the salespersons there, you know, to say, look, this came out, it's not mine. When right at that time, the person who had been the last person to use that service came up panting because she realized she did not get her returning change. And we wondered if that, you know, he had no intention of keeping the money. He was looking for the person to say, who do I give this to? It's not mine, when the woman showed up. And it made us wonder if that was a correction for the tribe of Asher in that specific incident that he did, even though it's generations past. Or was it just a coincidence?
I'm sorry to inform you, it's a tikkun of Tony.
Okay. But it had nothing to do with helping Asher. Well, I'm sure he was a scoundrel when he was young, but he wouldn't do that today. I know that.
Right. Who knows? We don't know who his soul components are. But the issue, mm-hmm. the Torah tells us, if you find something, you will have an obligation to return it. And that obligation means to go to the authorities, which more than likely is not the person or the cashiers next to you, but to the management itself, or possibly even to the police. The question is, how much effort do you need to put into returning it? That's the overall understanding. But there's a very specific ritual. It's really not, I wouldn't call it a ritual, but I have no other word. It's a way of returning it and making sure that it gets to the right person. And in the final situation, if you have no way of doing it, you have no way of knowing who it belongs to, like a $100 bill that really has no way to identify it by the owner, you may hold it until the coming of Eliyahu, and then Eliyahu will determine who it gets returned to. So it is a tikkun.
I was hoping it was also helping. I was hoping it was helping the tribe of Asher. Is he such an honest person, that... I'm sure that his tikkun was way over, but anyway, maybe there was something lingering, but it's good to know.
A lot of those, the concept of the dust of the negativity is we're all having to clean up.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I could be wrong. That it relates to the tribe of Asher may very well be true. And when we get to that section where we're reading about the tribe of Asher, let's bring it up again and maybe I'll have a different answer.
Okay. All right.
Are there any other questions or comments? You all have a beautiful afternoon. Hope to see you in the classes tomorrow. We have a Jewish history class at 11, as well as the two evening classes, the Deep Zohar and the questions and answer period. Shalom Gadol.
Shalom Gadol, and thank you.
Shalom Gadol, thank you. Shalom.